Welcome to Breakfast at Beverley's, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the fascinating world of transport and logistics. Join your host, Beverley Bell CBE, an industry expert and former senior traffic commissioner, as she navigates the highways and byways of the industry. From sunrise to sunset, we're here to accompany you on the road, bringing you insights, advice, and thought-provoking conversations with notable guests in the field. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to season two of Breakfast at Beverley's, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Carolyn Evans. Carolyn is a highly respected transport lawyer who's built an impressive career in the sector. After qualifying as a solicitor in 2004 and becoming a duty solicitor, she also became a prosecutor for the DVSA, whilst appearing on behalf of defendants in the Crown Court and the Court of Appeal. She's also represented clients before the Upper Tribunal in appeals against decisions made by the Traffic Commissioner. In 2015, Carolyn was appointed as a legal member of the Solicitors Disciplinary Tribunal, and the following year she founded CE Transport Law, making the best use of her extensive legal experience and expertise. I'm delighted today to welcome Carolyn as a guest. So, Carolyn, welcome, and thank you very much for coming to see us and take part in our podcast today. Usual question for my guests: what have you had for breakfast?
I had a croissant this morning and a cup of coffee. Very nice.
Typical?
Well, it depends. During the week, I'm a bit of a saint. Normally, porridge, coffee, and then at the weekend, I tend to slide down the hill a little bit.
No, not slide down.
Breakfast, whatever.
Not slide down the hill.
Whatever goes.
And you've been for a run this morning?
Yes, I have. I did the couch to 5K last year in July because I suffer with a bad back. Probably because of my height, and it basically cured it.
Really?
Within 3 months. Yeah, I was discharged from my physio, and I'm only just about managing to shuffle round. It's nothing impressive, but it was obviously enough to keep my bad back at bay, so I've kept on with it.
I'm surprised that running actually makes it better.
I said that to the physio. I was surprised that it had had that effect, but he said it was obviously to do with muscles in my back that I wasn't using. Probably because I'm bent over a desk all day.
Well, absolutely, and I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate to that. So talking of being bent over desks, in working constantly, you kindly gave us some briefing notes.
Yes.
And you said that you decided at one stage you would become a solicitor. Why on earth would you want to become a solicitor, Carolyn?
Well, it was, I hadn't thought of it when I was at school particularly, until I was doing my A-levels, and I had a brilliant and inspiring teacher, Mr. Veets, a history teacher, who said to my mum on parents' evening that I had an analytical brain and would be a good solicitor. But really, after that, I gave no thought to it and picked my university course sitting in my garden with a prospectus.
And what did you pick?
I did linguistics and philosophy dual honours, which, and I realised fairly early on in the course that had been an error of judgment, but I thought I'd better finish it.
It's a really interesting combination. Linguistics,
you say interesting, that's one word. Well, I think I was interested in philosophy and good at English language.
Right, okay. So did you do the whole course?
Yeah, I did finish it. But my enthusiasm had waned.
And where did you do that?
Early on. I did it at Manchester University, which was, and still is, a very good university.
Oh, it is excellent.
Yeah.
If you were doing that degree again now and you felt you'd made a mistake, would you have carried on to the end or would you have changed?
Absolutely not. Yeah, I'd have changed. But I think when you're 18, you just want to crack on with it, don't you? I wanted to finish the course and get on with my life. But no, now I'd definitely go back, repeat the year.
And would you do law?
Well, I think at that time, law wasn't on my radar. So the idea of peeling away from a course that I'd started and doing something else was problematic because I didn't know what else I would have done. It was only when I finished and thought, what am I going to do with this? Got a job in a bank. I was working shifts. It was pretty awful, and I ended up on the phone one night to a university friend who had gone to law college, who had done a law degree, and she said, why don't you do this? You'd love it. It's a brilliant course. And yeah, my mum and dad in those days used to watch the 10 o'clock news. They've since got fed up of it. But I remember just walking into the living room and saying, so I've decided I'm going to go to law college. And my dad said, you've only just got a job. You're not going back.
Who funded it?
Well, it was a combination of a loan. The bank, who had spent quite a lot of time and money training me, agreed to move me from a 40-hour to a 20-hour week. So I then worked 20 hours at the weekend and in the evenings. So, yeah, it was a combination. And my parents, of course, helped me as well. But it did mean I had to live at home for a little bit longer, which didn't last very long.
No, I can imagine. Okay. So in your briefing notes, you've talked about your imposter syndrome days. What do you mean by that, Carolyn?
Well, I went to law college and, you know, was the first person in my family to do that. My parents are both hard workers, working class people. They're both from huge families with lots of siblings. So I've got a large extended family. But I mean, I went to a comprehensive school. And to find myself immersed in this environment where my peers were generally affluent, very well educated, clever, you do compare yourself to them, or I did, rather unfavourably, and just felt at the time it was only a matter of time before someone was going to find me out, you know. So I spent quite a lot of time hiding out.
So two questions. Did you like those people, and did it put you off law?
Well, I realised much later in life that paranoia about other people judging you is actually, you're bad. You are sitting in judgment of them. And when you realise that and you can pivot and change your outlook, it brings all these people into the sphere of your friendship groups and your colleagues. At the time, of course, I hung out with people like me who'd had a comprehensive education that I didn't feel intimidated by, but I was able to change that over time. Did I like them? Some of them.
But it didn't put you off the law?
It didn't. I mean, I think, I don't know whether you agree with this, the fantastic thing about law is it's got such a big sphere.
Yes.
Oh, you can work in the local centre helping people who can't afford to pay for legal advice and very much need it. Or you can go and work in the city and take three clean shirts and spend the week there. And so what I loved about it was the choice that it brought in terms of where I would go with it when I finished.
And that leads us nicely onto what you describe as your skint years, where you were working in London.
Yeah.
And you were doing mental health work.
That's it. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, it really appealed to me when I saw this job as a paralegal in London. I was representing people who were detained against their will in hospitals. And that was quite a broad spectrum of people who'd committed significant criminal offences, or people who were detained because they had a significant food issue, anorexia, bulimia, etc. Or they had an ism, alcoholism, they had a significant drug issue. But
What sort of years would this be?
So this was straight out of law college, so 20 years ago. But I was very, very poorly paid. And I would go from hospital to hospital with all my cases on my back, you know, and I'd just run between the hospitals to see clients. I'd come home at night, and I lived in a room in accommodation that a lady owned, and I'd make myself a little omelette. I'd have half one night and half the next. You know, I was just absolutely broke, but determined that if I could get to the other side of it, I knew that something good would come of it.
You must have enormous self-discipline to only half the omelette.
Well, I knew if I didn't, there wouldn't be much on offer the following night. So I think that was the incentive. So yeah, I was broke in those days, but
the work was hard. Mental health work, very difficult.
The work was hard, but hard in the way that you would expect, in that it was physically hard because you were going from hospital to hospital.
Hard.
But what I hadn't expected was that the people that you meet, you become embroiled in their lives. And a lot of people with significant mental health problems have fallen out with their families. Their loved ones, one by one, have drifted off because they usually can be very difficult or at least complex characters. And they have these horrendous, difficult, complex histories. And part of my job was to understand that history. So I'd be reading their medical notes going back 20 years. And it just kept me awake at night. I felt an enormous amount of sympathy. And the remit of what you can achieve as their solicitor is confined to making an application for the release from their section. And so I felt I had to find something else to do.
Yes, I mean, I did crime. Yeah. I did criminal defence work. I didn't do the mental health work like you did. Mm. But you do become very affected by the people that you're dealing with and the people you're looking after, don't you? And it can be very mentally challenging. And you can lie awake at night sometimes in a cold sweat thinking, how do I deal with this case? Mm. And it's hard work. Although I confess, I never did just eat half an omelette. I'd have to eat the whole thing. But there we go. So you then start doing crime and you start prosecuting for DVSA. Is that where you learnt to love a tachograph, Caroline?
Well, I did crime for a couple of years, probably more like 3 or 4 years before I moved to the firm to do the prosecution work. So I wanted to transfer the training contract, sent out some CVs. One landed on a partner's desk who just secured a large fraud case, but it was a transport case. So I worked on that for about a year. He just phoned me and said, I've got this case, come over, transferred the contract, moved to Milton Keynes, and finished my training contract there.
You make that sound very simple. I'm sure it must have been quite a lot of work to arrange that transfer and to go and do a completely different area of the law that you'd not done before.
Well, I think to go from mental health law to
transport,
to doing, criminal law. I mean, I was then going out all times of the night and day. I mean, you'll remember this. The expectation is that you'll go out all night, you'll represent people, usually a number of clients during that period, have a shower, and then you'll be back at court 9 o'clock the next day, ready to try and get them all out on bail. Really, you know, that is really tough. And for me, that work, those hours, that had a lifespan. So I did another couple of years in a niche criminal practice and then wanted to change again. And so I applied for a job in a medium-sized high street practice that were looking for someone to come in and prosecute some of their cases. They were also an RHA panel member, so we were doing some defence work as well. And I thought it would be a nice change. You laugh. But I loved it compared to, you know, reading all these dreadful histories or going out at 3 o'clock in the morning because someone's pinched a couple of Ferrero Rocher from the local Tesco's, you know, and more besides. It was like taking the pack off and doing something that was interesting, but
rewarding.
Also manageable. Yeah,
rewarding.
Yeah. Well, unlike the mental health and the crime, the turning point for me in the criminal work was spending a whole weekend prepping a case for this chap. And I did his trial on the Monday. It was thrown out at half time. And when I walked out of the courtroom to shake his hand, he'd already gone.
Really? Nice.
And it's just, you wonder if...
Nice.
If they don't appreciate it and it doesn't mean anything to them, you're not very well paid for it. Actually, what's the point?
Whereas the lovely transport sector industry clients are generally extremely appreciative.
Yeah.
And will take the time and the trouble to say thank you.
Yeah.
It's a very diverse sector. You do both PSV and HGV.
Yeah.
You deal with clients that might be one or two vehicles, or there could be 1,000 vehicles and 1,000 drivers. What's the one piece of advice that you would have for any client who you're going to be looking after, no matter what size the fleet or what the type of operation is in transport law?
Well, we rarely get the proactive work. So from time to time, we get a client coming and see us who says, I want to be proactive, and we can review their compliance arrangements, give them some advice about how to improve it. But that is a minuscule portion of what we do. Most people who come to us have found themselves in a tight spot and they need some help rowing out of it. So the advice we give them is that the more time, effort, energy they can spend, and sometimes resource, in preparing their case, the better the outcome. You know, people want you, or expect you, not unreasonably, as their lawyer, to move the needle in terms of an outcome. If they could get the result you're going to achieve by themselves, then they may as well tip up and do it. They come to you because they have an expectation and a requirement, usually, in terms of an outcome. And most people understand that you're going to give them some advice about how to achieve it. But some people, I think, are surprised, disappointed, that most of what you do is limited to advising them. You can handhold, you'll have a number of meetings to make sure that they're meeting those requirements and preparing their case in the right way. But a lot of it still falls on them. They need the resource and they need the time to make it happen. So in terms of advice, it's always make time to prepare adequately. Because if you don't, you're not going to get the result that you hope for or need.
But the time limits are very demanding, and they're getting even more demanding now for public inquiry preparation.
Yeah.
And sometimes with court preparation. I mean, obviously, if it's a trial, then the courts will take a lot longer. But if it's a quick guilty plea in a magistrate's court to an overloading or something, then it's often dealt with very, very quickly. But that's not necessarily as complex. But for public inquiry, where they're licenses on the line, their livelihoods on the line, there's an awful lot to be done in a very short period, isn't there? That's presumably where you and your team come in to say, give us the documents,
yep,
and we'll do what we can with them.
Yep.
It's that providing the documents to you, like it is with our business,
yeah,
in a timely manner, not 3 days before the public inquiry hearing.
The complication for them is, of course, they come to you, and particularly in small and even medium-sized firms, they have very limited resource.
Yes.
So they might say to me, I will try to get that done by Wednesday. And I find myself saying, don't try to get that to me, get it to me. Because if you don't, we're going to have to push a deadline, you're going to come in for some criticism, and you find yourself immediately on the back foot.
Yeah, which is never a great place to be if you're going to appear before a traffic commissioner as an operator. Do you enjoy the work?
I enjoy it enormously. I like the people that we work with. I like the work that we do. I find it really interesting to go to people's premises and see how they're doing their business. Because, of course, it's such a diverse client base. Lots of people need lorries. So whether you're going to a large demolition firm, that's my next life choice, by the way.
What's that?
Demolition.
Right, you like knocking things down.
I love that. I find that really exciting.
You've got a destructive personality, have you, Carolyn?
Although these days I think it's less about just putting a bomb under it, and they take them down, top down now, don't they?
Yeah.
It's much less exciting. But yeah, whether you're going to a demolition firm or a small scaffolder, you're trying to help them achieve the same outcome. But it's all really interesting. Systems, management, processes, people. And I'm sure you'll agree that you can tell very quickly what the culture is in the business and how much work is going to be involved in getting them to where they need to be and where most of them want to be.
Any institution will have its own culture.
Yeah.
And when we do our Transport Manager CPC refreshers, we look at the causes of non-compliance. And often culture's one of those.
Yeah.
People choosing not to do it right. tiny proportion, or people trying to do it right, but it could be incompetence, or it could be, we talk about our CMA file.
Yeah,
cover my something, which obviously I won't say on the podcast. But yeah, culture is everything. Culture and attitude. You can empower people. You can train them. You can educate them. You can extend their knowledge. If they don't have the right attitude, or there's a culture of non-compliance, or what's the word I'm looking for? Complacency. Then it can be very difficult.
I think part of our job is to try to make them appreciate that there is also a cost of non-compliance. And I don't mean picking up the bill for advisors. What I mean is they find themselves in a race to the bottom, don't they? Because if they don't have good systems and processes, if they don't spend enough money on their vehicles, they can't get the right drivers. And if they don't get the right drivers, they find themselves with compliance headaches. Whereas if they invested that time in the vehicles, in the drivers, in the staff, and then, of course, they win the better business.
Yes.
They're getting better work. And so it's about partly about trying to persuade them that to have a compliant organisation with a good culture is going to be beneficial and financially beneficial for them in the longer term.
Yes, and it's false economy not to make that investment.
Yeah.
So before I ask you a little bit more about a certain conference that's coming up, is there a particular case that in your entire career so far as a solicitor stays with you? It could be in the transport sector, it might not be in the transport sector, either because you think you did really well in that particular case and got a fabulous result, or because you think you didn't get a fabulous result and you might have done something differently.
Well, I think as a solicitor, you rarely remember the cases that you've succeeded in, because they're the ones you get up the next day and you just do the next one. It's the ones that haven't gone in the way that you would have liked or you would have hoped that you remember, where people that you think were deserving of a better outcome perhaps didn't get it for whatever reason. They're the ones that stay in my mind. There are a number of them. Perhaps interestingly, a lot of the cases I remember are the ones I did in mental health.
Mm.
They're the ones that stayed with me, the individuals, the people that I met, the complications, how tough life was for them. You wonder, years later,
Where they are.
I had a client phone me a few weeks ago who I'd represented when I first set up on my own about 8 years ago. And he phoned me and said, I just wanted to phone and say thank you.
Aww.
He said, I'm sorry it's 8 years later, but I had such a lot going on. It's been in my mind.
Oh, I'm all overcome.
That I must phone and say thank you. And that's important, isn't it? To remember to say thank you to the people that work for you. Thank you to, you know, us if we've done a good job. It's those cases, unfortunately, that stay with you. But perhaps that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's those cases that you learn from, and it's those cases that you feel determined you won't let the same outcome happen. You know, you're going to drive the agenda, control the narrative, and make sure that people get the right outcome. It becomes part of your culture and part of your agenda.
Mm. Yes, I think you're right. The ones you remember are the ones that don't fit the mould.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, if I'd done that differently, and if I'd not said that, or if I had said this, might I have got a different outcome? Probably not. But we beat ourselves up, don't we, sometimes?
Well, they don't give evidence well. That's often the way. Do you agree?
Yes, but I wouldn't necessarily admit to it. To the judge.
Yeah, they can sit with you in a room. They feel comfortable with you.
Yes.
They can open up to you. They talk competently and capably about their business. They get in front of a judge.
And it all...
I think they just unravel to the extent that I've stood outside and said, deep breaths, you're going to have to go in and find a way to explain yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I sometimes find it's the people I think will give evidence really well that find it very difficult. And those, I think, are going to absolutely smash it. Mm. They'll go to pieces.
Mm. I'm saying nothing, Your Honour. I'm saying nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got two young teenage boys.
Yeah.
If either of them said that they wanted to be lawyers, would you encourage them or discourage them?
I'd encourage anyone to be a solicitor. For me, it's been a brilliant career that I've thoroughly enjoyed. I found it rewarding. You are working in an environment where you feel you are actually changing people's lives for the better, that you're doing something good, that that can drive you on to do bigger and better things. And it's completely flexible, isn't it? They can go and work in London, pack three shirts, stay down there all week on a bunk bed, or they can go and work in the local help centre where they're reaching out to people who need legal advice and can't afford it. I think it's just a brilliant career. And I would encourage anyone to do it, including the kids. My youngest has expressed an interest, but given he's only 12, I don't expect that to stick particularly.
It might do, because if he's decided at 12, that's what he wants to do. Does he want to come and work for you?
Well, he said we were doing a little video for a school project. And when I asked him what he wanted to do when he grows up, he paused and I said, go on, if you want to be a footballer, you can say. And he said, actually, I was thinking I might like to come work with you.
Wow.
And I nearly fell off my chair at the time. But it's great, isn't it? It would be, it would be great if we could bring him into the business, or my older lad. Yeah, I think it's a great career. I'd be pleased for them to do it if that's what they wanted.
Well, I'm relieved to say neither of my children ever wanted to join me as a lawyer. All I can say, thank God. But there we go. Their skills lie in other areas. Okay, so we know that pretty soon there's the CE Transport Law Conference coming up.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. Who should attend? Why should they attend?
Okay, so I've always done a conference with the exception of COVID. I felt it was a good opportunity to bring people together in one room. You've got lots of expertise there and people still like that face-to-face contact. It was a good opportunity for them to network. It's a good opportunity for them to learn something. And it's a good opportunity for us to develop our brand. So we've always done the conference, but it's never been bigger than 80. We've never charged for the conference before. We've had loads of great speakers and good feedback. And when I went last year to the Ridgeway, where we've had the conference, they showed me the room next door, which is this huge room with a big stage, and said, why don't you think about having it in here next year? And at the time, I thought, oh, God, I'm not sure about that. I was still getting over the last one. But actually, you go home, you sleep on it and get up the next day and think, why not? Why not? Let's do it. If we can do it for 80, we can do it for 300. Let's do it. But I knew I'd need to bring in some expertise, some gravitas. And so that's why we approached you, in the hope that you'd come in, collaborate with us and take it to the next level. Who should attend? Well, historically, we've had a number of operators who've attended, transport managers, particularly external TMs, where they're on a number of licenses and they're keen to keep up with developments. So it's a combination: operators, transport managers and consultants. Because they might be looking after a large number of individuals or businesses. It's important that they stay ahead of the game. Sometimes people will come on and see us in the tight spot described earlier. And you're saying, when was the last time you did any training? And when they say, well, never. And you say, well, you've come to see me. I'm a solicitor. I qualified 20 years ago. If I told you I hadn't done a drop of training in between because I didn't think I needed to, how would you feel about relying on my expertise? You'd query it. And I think that helps them to understand that actually it can be really beneficial if you stay on top of developments, not just in the law, I mean, the legislative platform hasn't changed for over two decades, but the interpretation
longer than that.
Yeah, the expectation, I think, on operators has shifted. I mean, doing PIs 20 years ago, you'd have to be a very bad boy indeed for your licence to be revoked.
Well, I became a TC 25 years ago. The serially and seriously non-compliant.
That's it.
The phrase that I tried to introduce and I think hopefully succeeded in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a tiny proportion of the sector. Yeah. Let's remember, I think it's important that the sector generally does a fabulous job.
Yeah.
It's the invisibility of success. They deliver thousands of goods, millions of individual pieces of goods, thousands of people, millions of people every day, quietly getting on with it. And nobody says, oh, well done, chaps. All they do is go to the pages of the trade press and go, what poor sod's in trouble this week?
Yeah.
And it's important, I think, to remember that the industry does a fabulous job. So there's two parts to your conference, aren't there? You're dealing with the morning part. So tell us a little bit about what's going to happen in the morning.
Well, in the morning, we are doing a navigating law panel piece. So there'll be me. I've got Caroline Hicks from the DVSA coming to talk about developments in the DVSA. And then we've got Inspector Wenham, Rob Beckers.
Yeah, lovely, yeah.
Coming to talk to delegates about their responsibilities, their rights in relation to a major incident. So we're going to put that together in the morning, perhaps have a panel discussion afterwards. But the afternoon session, which you will be chairing, is more to do with prevention. So bringing training in, bringing consulting in, the benefits of that. And we've got a number of exceptional speakers in the afternoon covering everything from, we've got Mark Cartwright coming in from Highways. We've got a guest speaker dealing with first aid and we'll weave in
mental health.
We'll weave in some mental health stuff as well. Then we've got Pete Rushmer, who has his own large flagship consultancy firm. So we're going to try and bring all of that together. We have Richard Turfitt, who's the senior traffic commissioner, who has given up his time for us for a number of years now, gratefully. He's going to come in at the end and talk to us about regulation and compliance. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm hoping this year it's going to be our biggest and best.
I'm sure it will. And we're very much looking forward to taking part. So thank you for asking us. So we've talked a lot about work. We've talked a lot about your sort of looking back. Two things, really. What do you do to relax if you ever get time, apart from go running?
Well, I think if you have a young family and you're working full time, free time is scarce, which is why I built in the little bit of jogging, and that is about making time for yourself. So I try to peel off to the gym or go for a run, make time for friends. I've got a dog, and the highlight of my weekend is definitely getting out, especially on a nice day, and having a good 2-hour walk.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. Of course, dogs are better than kids because they love you unconditionally.
Absolutely.
You don't have to pay to educate them and they eat anything. I always love my dogs.
You just nailed it in a sentence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what does the future hold for CE Transport Law?
Well, we are growing. We are in a reasonably small office in Stony Stratford, which we are trying to move out of presently. We'd like to move to new premises, and we are giving consideration to bolting on some additional expertise outside of our niche practice, which has always focused exclusively on transport law and crime. So whereas until now, if it had a truck or a bus in it, it was our bag. We're trying to expand that to have a more commercial reach. And we're hoping to combine that with the move to new premises and the conference and collaborating with other consultants and firms like yourselves to try and have a greater offering for operators, allowing us to bring in legal advice, consultancy, training, the whole package.
That sounds really exciting, but you've missed a little bit out.
Oh, go on.
CE Demolition Limited.
I love that.
You're going to buy a big wrecking ball.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you can sort of knock down a few premises when you're having a bad day. Well, we get to the stage now. We've had a really interesting chat. I've probably forgotten to tell you this.
Uh-oh.
But you're...
We haven't pressed record.
No. You're a lawyer. You'll cope. Sometimes it's purely voluntary. Sometimes at the end, we can say to our guests, is there anything you'd like to ask me?
Yes, I've listened to the other podcasts, which are absolutely super, by the way. But all right, so I'd given this some thought yesterday on the ferry. An operator comes to see you, Beverly. He's found himself in a spot of bother. He feels the glowing lamplight of regulatory attention from the DVSA. He's heading towards a hearing. He's concerned. He's only got 4 grab lorries. And he's only got a limited amount of resource.
God, I feel like this is an exam question. Go on.
It is! What would you tell him to spend it on?
What would I tell him to spend it with a limited amount of resource?
He's got a limited amount of resource, 4 lorries. He's in a tricky position compliance-wise. What would you tell him to spend that limited resource on?
Getting top-notch advice on how to do it properly and listening and implementing that advice. And that could be an independent transport consultant coming in for a day or half a day. It could be getting somebody like yourselves to say, we'll represent you at the hearing, but you've got to do what we tell you or advise you.
That's conditional.
that's the difference, isn't it?
It is.
Between a consultant and a solicitor that's representing somebody at a public inquiry hearing, which is why, quite properly, TCs won't allow consultants to also be the representative.
Yeah.
So I would say get the best advice you can afford, but listen to it and implement it.
Yeah.
Because how many clients do transport lawyers, not you and I, know who give advice, but the client goes, well, that's all very well, but I'm not actually going to implement it. And that's where I think is their downfall.
Absolutely. And
is that the right answer?
I think it is. Yeah, you've definitely got the job.
Okay. Well, thank you very much indeed. Really lovely to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to come all the way over to the Isle of Wight and talk to us, and have a very safe journey back.
Thank you very much.
As we conclude another fascinating journey through the world of transport and logistics, we want to express our sincere appreciation for listening. Your support means the world to us. Keep the conversation going by reaching out on social media with your questions and feedback. We're eager to hear from you and continue exploring together. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and check out our other episodes online. Take care on the roads and see you in the next episode.